All right. My name is Sue, and I'm a program manager in SRE. One of the things I spend my time doing is looking at our postmortems, seeing if they're effective, doing analysis across many, many postmortems, and looking for systemic problems, systemic root causes, and also looking for ways we can improve our postmortem process, including how we manage our action items.
Hey, everybody. I am Betsy Beyer, and I am a tech writer for SRE based in New York, one of the authors and editors of the SRE book. And for those of you who picked up a copy of Login when you checked into the conference, Sue, John Lunny, and I actually have an article on postmortem action items in that issue, in the spring issue. So this talk is a complimentary follow-up to that article.
All right, so everyone in this room probably knows how important postmortems are to our culture and making sure that we're learning as much as we can after every incident. But what do we do with all these action items, all these big ideas that we have about how to fix the problems that we discover during an outage? I ran a survey in the early days at Google and when I was there and found that action item follow-up is the number one problem people report about our postmortem process by far. Actually, it far outpaced anything else we asked about. And so we're going to talk about that today.
So beyond just writing a postmortem, there's really an art to crafting a follow-up action item plan. So how do you make sure that your action items don't end up in this black hole of things you'll get around to someday, maybe? So your best chance of avoiding this fate is to create your action item plan in a really thoughtful way from square one. So our talk's going to cover some common anti-patterns that we've seen over the years and some best practices that we have found helpful. Also, a quick note on jargon. At Google, we commonly refer to action items as AIs. So if Sue and I start talking about AIs, that's what we're talking about.
All right, so the first anti-pattern we'll talk about is an unbalanced action item plan. So you may have people who approach their action item planning as, okay, let's throw in our Band-Aids and make sure we fix this problem as quickly as possible. And then you'll have colleagues who are like, no, wait, we really need to re-architect this faulty system. It's been broken. It causes us all sorts of problems over the years. Let's just fix it once and for all. For example, one thing we found is that component interfaces are a really big source of outages for us. So we might have one component send a new error code to another component. That other component has no idea what that error code is, and instead of failing gracefully, it just seg faults. Now, what you might want to do is implement some graceful failure in there and actually fix that problem. But maybe you've noticed that this has actually been a problem for many components, and in order to fix it once and for all, you want to build a new common error handling library that every component's using, and you can never have this problem again. So which one do you choose?
So Sue and I are going to argue that you should really be doing both of these things. Ideally, your action item plan should strike a healthy balance between incremental or Band-Aid solutions and then more long-term strategic improvements. So to return to this example of component interface problems, it's probably going to take you months to build out that new error handling infrastructure. So in the meantime, your system should probably be failing gracefully. That's an easier and quicker fix. Ideally, your AI plan should contain both of these items.
So the next anti-pattern is only fixing symptoms and not the actual disease. So in this example, graceful failure is the symptom, or that seg fault is the symptom, and you can fix it just by adding some graceful failure in that failure handling. But is that all you should be looking at?
So when it comes to diagnosing an issue, you should be really digging deep and doing some root cause analysis. We might be able to correct a system seg fault by making sure that the system instead fails gracefully, but we should also be asking ourselves some other questions, like why isn't failing gracefully standard practice, and what's happening in our development process that we aren't already architecting graceful failure into our system. So maybe in this example, the real root cause is that we should have better workflows to prevent seg falls from happening in the first place. So for example, you might want to think about adding an item to our code review checklist, or maybe implementing static analysis that warns us when we have seg faults in our code.
All right, so humans as a root cause. Now, we do blameless postmortems, so generally speaking, people are not pointing at humans. But there's actually many reasons for this. So humans are naturally bad at performing repetitive tasks, and even for non-repetitive tasks, you can't guarantee that they're going to follow directions. I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for a shortcut or a workaround for something that seems like I don't need to do it. So that's in addition to the fact that when we look at humans as our underlying root cause, people start to become afraid to admit that they've made a mistake, or they start sweeping issues under the rug. And that's the antithesis of what we want out of our postmortem culture. So what do we do instead? Oh, actually, let me give an example first. So say we have a system, a service that is getting a canary, but actually one of the cells is under scheduled maintenance, but not everybody knows about it. So during the canary, there's a problem, and someone drains the cell, and there's nowhere for it to drain to. Now we have an outage. And then you might say, well, wait, we all knew about this downtime. It was scheduled. There was an email. How could you have missed that?
So as Sue has already said, singling out a single person to blame this on is like rarely, if ever, going to be a good strategy for actually fixing problems. Instead, we should be asking ourselves, is it really reasonable to expect an engineer to read and remember every single email that comes across his or her inbox? Yes, engineers should be reading their email, but do we really want to rely on email announcements as our main avenue to prevent these kind of service failures? Not a good idea. So instead, a better solution is to remove the human error from this equation. So make it difficult for engineers to miss these kinds of announcements and events. So really, ideally, your system should automatically tell you what is happening in production. In our example case, you might want to think about featuring announcements about scheduled system maintenance and downtime upfront in the tools that your engineers use every day. Also, notify engineers when they're touching a part of a system that is near a planned outage or change window. So lacking visibility into the state of production is really a high-risk area, and therefore a really prime area for you to create some postmortem action items.
All right, so now we have an action item plan that covers both short-term and long-term fixes. You've addressed everything in your root cause tree, and you're not blaming humans. But are you actually missing a good opportunity for some new action items?
So really here we want to remind you to take a look at the entire timeline of your incident. Don't just think of prevention. You can also mitigate the impact of your incident by improving factors like your detection time, how long it takes you to triage an incident, how quickly you can roll back a change, and the scale of your initial rollout. This is also a good time to remind you guys that it can be really expensive to address the root cause of an incident. So if you really want to have a high impact by saving time cheaply, you might instead want to focus on improving detection, diagnosis, and triage. So the thinking behind this is really a lot of organizations spend a lot of time figuring out what is versus what isn't working, when it stopped working, what might have changed, who can or should fix the issue. So improving your process and communication around these steps can be a cheap way to get downtime back. And really, doing this is going to make life so much better for your SREs.
And I'll just mention, there was a really good talk before this about how to reduce your MTTR by improving your ability to diagnose where the actual root cause of your problem is. So if you didn't see it, I recommend the video for that. All right, so now that we've talked about some of the dysfunctional aspects of writing an action item plan, let's talk about some of the best practices that we have at Google to help us get those action items actually executed and implemented and into production. So first, make sure you actually have that work prioritized and added to someone's development plan. It does no one any good to have a big, long list of action items, but no one's ever actually assigned to do the work. So work with your development teams or even within your own team to get that work done.
Our next best practice is executive focus. So if senior leaders are paying close attention to whether or not your action items get closed, they're way more likely to actually get closed. And great photo. At Google, postmortems are on the radar of our senior leaders, both in SRE and beyond. So for example, our cloud org regularly reviews postmortems with VPs and directors to make sure that the right postmortems and AIs are getting all the attention they deserve. And our SRE leadership requires that every postmortem that affects users has at least one priority zero or priority one bug associated with it. So in the words of Ben Trainer, the founder of SRE, to our users, a postmortem without subsequent action is indistinguishable from no postmortem. So unless he personally grants an exception, all outages that affect users are going to fall under this policy. And I know that if Ben Trainer is personally checking on my P0 and P1 bugs, like, I'm probably going to close them out.
So we also do postmortem reviews and reports. So when we have a postmortem review, usually a team will review the postmortems that have happened within their team, and they'll make sure they review the following. They'll review their timeline. They'll review their root cause, they'll review the impact, and make sure that everyone understands those things. Then they'll go through their lessons learned section and make sure that they've fully explored what went well, what went wrong, and how we got lucky as well. And then finally, they'll use that to determine what action items need to be in their action item plan. And they'll review that action item list to make sure that every action item has a priority, someone's assigned to it, and it's very clear what needs to be done. And this is really critical to making sure that it actually gets done. In addition, we're looking at our entire corpus of postmortems and making sure that the action items are getting closed. She mentioned our P0, P1. We have a strict SLO for how long it takes us not only to get them done, but also when we respond to them. And so we keep track of all of the postmortems and make sure they're getting done, and getting done by the SLO that we set. And then we'll also take a look overall at how much technical debt we're building up from postmortem action items. So if you see this, you know, divide between how many action items are open versus how many action items are closed, that's a good representative of how much technical debt and therefore risk to your reliability is accumulating over time. And you don't want this to start deviating greatly. It just means that you're falling behind on getting things done.
Okay, so we have covered a lot of best practices and anti-patterns today, but in sum, we really wanted to emphasize that every postmortem should really have a balanced action item plan and concrete and actionable follow-up. So your company might already be conducting or planning to conduct postmortems, and once you are conducting postmortems, we really hope these tips will save you some of the pain we've experienced over the years. Even if you don't have really significant resources to dedicate to a really robust postmortem process, we hope these tips will help you be strategic in how you approach them.
We also wanted to add just a caveat that, you know, this is something that works for us, but definitely feel free to customize this for your team and the rigor that your team is willing to accept. If you try and institute too much all at once, you might have a rebellion on your hands. So definitely think about what's going to work best for your team and make your improvements slowly over time.
And if you are interested in any further reading, there is our aforementioned article in the spring issue of Login. Sue actually also has a fantastic chapter in the SRE book about postmortem culture. The SRE book is available free online under Creative Commons now if you want to check that out. And we also had a handout today on our with the sample postmortem AI checklist. And for those of you who didn't get a handout, I think we ran out. The stuff will be online.
Yeah, we'll put it on. Thank you. I'm not sure how much time we have for questions. Loads of time? 10 minutes? Okay. Any questions out there?
On your handout, you mentioned identifying rhyming incidents. Do you have any tools that you use for doing that? How much of that is a manual process? How do you go about finding the rhyming?
Right now, it's manual, unfortunately. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of that is looking across to other teams who have experienced similar outages. So they won't look exactly the same. But we do have tools that give you visibility into outages that other teams have had.
Yeah, everyone can see every postmortem from every team, so you can always look and see, especially if you're relying on a dependent service and you want to see, okay, who else has had issues because of that dependency, you can go find them.
Hi. What role in the organization do you think is best placed to create the AI plan, the action item plan? So like the incident manager or someone else?
I think it depends. So we generally advocate for having one postmortem owner, and it should be someone who participated in the incident. But it, you know, in some cases we have incidents that hand over from incident commander to incident commander. So it's best to choose one who can then sort of take it through the whole process. But it really is a collaborative effort, so they can't do it alone. And so we list all the collaborators on the postmortem as well. So picking someone who has the skills to sort of coordinate and collaborate and interface with developer project managers, too, is really important because you need to be able to get it on their development plan in many cases.
And I would also add that you're going to need to get buy-in from everybody involved in the postmortem with the plan, particularly if you're assigning action items to people on other teams. You don't want to just be like, oh, yeah, this other team's going to solve this great P0 bug. Like, make sure they're aware, they're bought in, they're going to actually follow up.
Yeah, so if your incident commander is not real great with the coordination and communication collaboration aspects, maybe, you know, just pick someone else from the team.
So you've mentioned a couple sticks to use to encourage people to act on action items after incidents. Do you have any suggestions for carrots to encourage positive behaviors?
We have something we call a fix-it periodically, and actually we're starting to run it more regularly than that. That gamifies closing out postmortem action items. So you can be on a leaderboard for fixing the most action items, and I think you can get some nominal rewards for that. So that helps.
And I think in general, just like indoctrinating it into your culture that people do close these out. Like, it's an abnormality if you have bugs that are lingering for, you know, weeks, months.
You do have to,
Sorry, I'm just sticking this up because this is a specific point. I work at Google with Betsy and Sue. My last promotion round, I got promoted. One of the things I listed was, here are all the awesome postmortems I've written. Like, a big thing is you need to make sure that people get credit for doing the work, because a lot of people consider it just grunge work, right? And I personally view that as like a massive, massive carrot for why people do this and why people follow up on it.
And I agree. You have to watch out for too much punitive, like, spirit to it. And so, we are on the lookout for that, for sure.
So you guys talked about always using a postmortem when there's something that's kind of affected users. When you have kind of an environment, like, I don't know, if you do them internally or something like that, when you have internal tools and stuff like that, how do you make sure that you're not doing way too many postmortems, or how do you scale your postmortem based on the size of the incident?
This question actually comes up a lot. And even last week, I think I had a conversation with someone. So the rule of thumb that I use is, if you're okay with this incident happening again, unmitigated, then maybe it's okay not to write a postmortem. But even if you are okay with it happening again, there's still benefit to writing a postmortem, because then you can document that decision that you made. I always err on the side of recommending a postmortem, and if you don't want to go into all of the details and take a little less time, that's okay. But if you have it, it then becomes this record that you can then go back and look at. And if those things keep happening over and over again, you might be having a pattern you want to look at.
And you might also want to consider having like a lightweight postmortem process versus a full-blown, robust postmortem process. So if it's something that merits follow-up and attention, but maybe, you know, didn't affect a huge customer base or something, then you could consider doing the lightweight review. And I think that lowering the bar to enabling people to do postmortems can be a good thing.
Like if you have no process to start with, having the mini postmortems, we have mini postmortems at Google, and that's a good way to introduce the process and get people used to it.
Hi, I was just wondering, you've talked a lot about postmortems for outages. What about doing formal incident analysis when something large and user-facing goes right, like a data center move or a new launch, a version upgrade, something like that? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so I'm a program manager by trade, so I think about doing project retrospectives is how I think of it. And we actually have some new project retrospectives templates that we've been using, and it includes things like, here's what went right, here's what didn't go right, here's where we got lucky, and then at the bottom, here are some of the best practices that we would recommend similar projects do, because it worked really well for us. Here's some risks that we didn't anticipate that maybe should be used for a similar project, and sort of trying to capture things the same way. Action items might be, let's update how we do project management for this because it worked out really well. So yeah, it's actually a very similar process, and we call it retrospectives, though. Yeah. I guess that's it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.